On this week's 51%, we meet the last nun teaching at a certain college in New York, and another nun who makes it her business to help bond people out of jail.
The main reason most people are in jail is because they don't have the money to get out. If you or I were there, someone would be there right away with the money.
We hear how a Maryland law that clears certain arrest records impacts one woman, and we bring you an essay on bystander racism. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. Lucky, each of us had a teacher or two who inspired us, mentored us, even changed our lives. Most of us wouldn't be where we are today without them. While many people in the music industry wouldn't be where they are today if not for Sister Mary Ann Nelson, a nun who has taught recording engineering, artist management, and rock and roll. She's the last sister teaching at the College of St. Rose, a private college in Albany, New York. She founded the college's music industry program in 1981, has directed it ever since, and coincidentally is the last nun to teach at the once all-girls Catholic school, the only full-time instructor remaining on staff. 51%'s Dave Lucas reports.
Over the years, I was very fortunate to have a lot of support and creative freedom that the sisters gave to me. Actually, they taught me how to teach. I had great teachers. The sisters were amazing. And, you know, as I was a student and then started back here as a teacher, I had great resources. I had great mentoring.
Nelson's official title is Associate Professor of Music Industry. She's enjoyed her time, especially as electronics transitioned into the digital age.
Years ago, it was a big thing. It was analog. I remember carrying big transformers in Europe. Everything, you know, just weighed tons of equipment. Nowadays, I can walk in with a laptop, a couple of small microphones, cables, and I'm in business. We've miniaturized it. Prices come down as well as the weight.
Nelson is the reason why Billboard has thrice named St. Rose to its lists of the top music business programs in North America. But starting the program wasn't easy when the majority of music schools and conservatories based their academia on classical music.
We really had to fight to get some ground to make popular commercial music viable. It's just part of the territory. So I think being able to create a program and an environment where students who want to learn music technology, who don't necessarily want to work in the classical field, can legitimately come in and work with just about any style of music, pop, rock, EDM, metal. One of the other things I'm pleased about, the jobs and the situations that my students have found on their own. And then their willingness to come back and work with today's students and network with them, give them opportunities, in some cases teach them.
She stays connected and involved with many of her past students, now in the performance or technical fields or working with record companies.
They email me every so often telling me what they're up to. When they're back in town, they frequently stop in to see me. I maintain a working relationship with some of them to this day.
Kelly Bradford runs a music management company in London. The 2012 graduate can't imagine what life would have been like without Nelson's music curriculum.
I started off as a music education major and realized that that was not a thing for me at all. And so I switched over to the music industry, not knowing anything about the course, not knowing really anything about the music industry, just knowing that I loved music. And Sister just took me under her wing and really showed me the ropes. I learned about law and contracts and just making sure that you keep your contacts and how to run a venue and, of course, her incredible, incredible recording skills. And she's just one of the coolest chicks I know and just a really, really important person at St. Rose. She changed my life and changed, I know, all of my friends' lives. So I just can't possibly imagine St. Rose without her or my life without her.
Nelson's office, classroom, and recording studios are in the college's Hearst Center for Communications and Interactive Media building. St. Rose's had clergy on the faculty since its 1920 founding. Music was one of the first majors offered. As the years passed, the nuns have retired, and many have died. When Nelson retires in a few years, there could be none left.
I'm to the point now where I am almost ready to hand it off to a new generation. We've been very fortunate in being able to bring aboard several new faculty members. They're young, they're innovative, they're performers, they're writers and arrangers, and they know the technical world. I could leave this Friday, and they could carry it on.
Despite decades of teaching, Nelson believes even today, women remain underrepresented in the recording engineering industry.
When I started in pro audio, there were very few women in the industry, either in the live end of it or the recorded end of it. Those that were in it were doing more jazz and classical music, and I've been able to see that turn around to some extent over the years. There are more women now in the engineering side, both live and recorded. But back when we started the program, it was the exception rather than the rule. And there are several organizations now, Women in Audio, Song Girls, a couple other organizations, that really create a network for women that are either in pro recording or pro live audio.
Nelson believes many of the women working who graduated from her program likely would not have been able to carve out positions in particular niche markets they now dominate had they not had the opportunity to attend St. Rose and exercise artistic freedoms. You may recognize this piece by 2011 graduate Allie Crystal.
Counting down the days until I can see my favorite place. I wish I could come around more often than I do. But this holiday, I'm coming home to you.
For 51%, I'm Dave Lucas.
Meanwhile, a nun in another state is working in a different way. By her own estimates, Sister Sue has handled more than 2,000 bond cases, and she has no intention of slowing down, as we hear in the following Kind World segment, produced by WBUR Zach Ezor.
Once you hear prison and jail, you think someone bad. You think of someone bad, right? But we've all done bad things. Wrong things, right? Just maybe haven't been caught. The people that are there are people. That's the first thing. And they need the same things that all of us need. I'm Sister Sue Kinsel. I'm a sister of the Holy Cross, and I've lived most of my life in South Bend, Indiana.
People don't always reach out to people who have broken the law. And that, I think it takes a special person and a special quality. My name is Maria Kazmarek. I am the executive director of the Dismiss House of South Bend. Her name is by the payphone, her phone number. Everybody, you know, when you say Sister Sue in certain areas of the city, they know who she is. You know, Sister Sue has been known to actually protest and actually been, you know, arrested and carted off to the county jail, you know, during a sit-in. And people would bond her out, and she'd be so mad because she said, I don't want you to bond me out. I'm trying to, you know, make people aware that this is not right.
The main reason most people are in jail is because they don't have the money to get out. If you or I were there, someone would be there right away with the money. But most people are there because they don't have the money.
You know, $500 is a lot of money. Families contact her to help with the bail. They may be able to scrape together $250, and that's their commitment. And then she can, you know, match that. They can, you know, actually post bond and continue working until their case is resolved.
I probably have about $15,000 in the fund. So sometimes I can tell them right away how much I can help with. If it's been the breadwinner, probably will or has lost his job. You know, what are they going to do? Talk to a mother who has two teenage girls who are living at home, going to school. They're there by themselves. How are they going to pay the rent? So I see close to 10 people a week. Then I just go through my questions. Your name, your address, your phone number. Who do you live with? What's the charge? How long you been here? What's the bond? Have you ever been arrested before? To be honest, there are very few that I would refuse to do some kind of help. I think everyone deserves a chance.
People who have been incarcerated or in jail probably have had many failures in life, and often many people weren't there for them. When you talk with her, she doesn't say, oh, you know, that's horrible. She just listens. And I think that's the thing, is that she sees community. She sees them as being part of her community.
I mean, people will come up to me and say, oh, you helped me, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I said, oh, okay. And how are you doing now? I don't remember what they were there for. That's not what's important. Important is what you're doing now.
Kind World is produced by WBUR Boston. If a kind act, large or small, has affected your life in a profound way, we want to hear about it. Share your story by visiting wbur.org/kindworld.
According to a study based on federal statistics, about one-third of all Americans have been arrested before age 23. The immediate consequences of a crime are jail time, fines, and parole. But a record can also impact many aspects of a person's life, from employment to public assistance to housing. In October, several bills went into effect in Maryland that would allow certain misdemeanors and crimes that are no longer criminalized, like possession of small amounts of marijuana, to be shielded from public view. Jonna McCone has the story of one woman who's been working to clear a record that has followed her for the past 13 years.
These are going to be painted, and I'll...
Danielle makes art in her apartment in Northwest Baltimore. We're surrounded by colorful painted vases, patterned fabric, and her children's artwork.
And a lot of my items are literally trash. Like, you know, I find things everywhere.
Danielle, who is 37 and a mother of seven, has struggled to support her family. Over the last decade, she's worked a patchwork of jobs as an artist, hairdresser, and baker. But her sporadic income is not by choice. After an arrest in 2002, she's had a hard time finding full-time employment.
I was in an abusive relationship, and during an attack, I fought back. And once the police arrived, they informed me that I would be arrested as well.
When the police got to the scene, Danielle and her ex-boyfriend both had minor injuries. At the time, they were each struggling with drug addiction. In the end, she was charged with
2 separate counts of deadly weapon with the intent to injure and 1 second-degree assault charge.
The deadly weapons in Danielle's possession were a lamp and the top to a glass table. She spent 3 days in jail before being released on bail. And though she was charged with a felony, the case never went to court, and she was never convicted. A set of laws went into effect, allowing people like Danielle to get those charges removed from public view. On that day, she headed to a clinic where dozens of attorneys were helping people figure out if they were eligible.
I'm having my record as much today.
After 13 years of having a record,
let me call them.
Danielle is sparkling with anticipation.
Here for expungement stuff. All right, here's a clipboard and pen. So go ahead and fill out that information on the intake for me.
There are hundreds of people here. Many had lined up outside starting at 6 a.m. In addition to removing non-convictions, the laws also allow the expungement of charges that are no longer criminal offenses. And people with some nonviolent misdemeanors, like disorderly conduct and disturbing the peace, could have those shielded from public view with court approval. Karen Aslan is senior policy advocate at Job Opportunities Task Force, a nonprofit that works to improve job skills and incomes for low-wage workers.
We're hosting this clinic to ensure that individuals can come to determine, this is what your record looks like. This is what's eligible. This is what you need to do. Help them fill out court forms so that they can leave today and head directly to the courthouse and drop off their forms.
So just ask me about my income, benefits, assets, income. Are you currently employed? No. Okay. There's one page on here. I guess it's just about your charges. Any information you can provide will only assist the attorney. Do not worry if you cannot recall all of the information. But I can remember very well.
The clinic takes place in a large church in Northwest Baltimore. Danielle walks downstairs to a room crowded with lawyers working at makeshift desks.
I have so much in my mind right now. I want to scream. I can't believe this is going to happen today. 13 years.
These new laws were signed by Republican Governor Larry Hogan after being passed by the Democrat-controlled General Assembly. Democratic Delegate Curtis Anderson of Baltimore says they've been in the works for a few years.
The Second Chance Act, as well as the expungement of crimes that are no longer crimes, put a lot of time in it. The bill failed two or three times. It's been cut down a lot. But we finally did get something passed. And then to come today and just see the faces of the people who it's going to help has re-energized me to get the rest of it done.
But some people at the clinic found out they were not eligible to have their records removed. As I'm interviewing Delegate Anderson, a woman in her mid-20s walks up.
Ms. Anderson, I have a question.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for sponsoring the bill. I have a master's degree. I have 3 degrees.
Yes.
I don't have a job.
I
can't get my record expunged.
The woman, India, was charged with failure to stop at a stop sign following an arrest for driving with a suspended license. She was surprised to find out that she wasn't eligible to get her record cleared today.
I want to have a voice for my people. I'm very educated, and I was, you know, out here in line with everybody and speaking to everybody about what you can and cannot get expunged, but they don't know there's certain stuff they can't get expunged.
And there are many in India's position. That's one reason Karen Aslan is planning to continue to lobby in the next legislative session.
You have a whole host of other low-level misdemeanor offenses that should be eligible for shielding that are not. You have a whole host of nonviolent felony offenses. You know, possession with intent to distribute is the number one offense that Marylanders are arrested for. That's not eligible for shielding.
Expanding the scope of the laws is not something many in the business community want to see happen. Before I leave the clinic, I asked Danielle what she would say to a business owner who says the right to know someone's arrest history is important.
I would say that I am not what my record says. I'm an individual first. I have a lot of trade skills, talents, and attributes that will add to the potential company I'm employed with. And also, I have full confidence in not getting into any other trouble.
Danielle and others at the clinic also used it as a chance to network and meet people facing similar challenges. That's what happened in this group during a workshop on the new laws.
We are our own best allies because we know what it's like to come out and get every door slammed in your face.
That's what I've been saying for like the past 3 hours, that
yes.
We have to stop going outside of us. It's yes. Us right
yes.
Now,
absolutely.
Right here. We have a network right here that we can utilize.
At that workshop, Danielle gave out a few of her business cards as she told people about the art she makes and sells. For those who can't find work, they're determined they'll support one another. I'm Jonna McCone.
We close our show with an essay from writer Dr. Jerry Burns.
Alternet is an online news organization that provides articles from a variety of alternative publications. Like Huffington Post, it curates news and stories, and recently I read a doozy. In December, in Austin, Texas, 2 Muslim women were more than mistreated at a popular cafe. Islamophobia reared its ugly head when a man asked one of them if she had a gun. He continued his toxic remarks by saying that he expected her to shoot it at him. All they were doing was waiting to be seated for a nice lunch. Like him. That incident was dark and ugly by itself, but there was something even worse about it. all of the people who were in the cafe that day sat in stony silence and listened to him insult them. The management did nothing more than seat the offensive gentleman. No one said anything. No one extended a caring gesture. The women left the restaurant in tears. This news story incident brought me back to elementary school. When I was growing up, the playground was a terrifying place. There were flying balls and opportunities for accidents. And I had a right to fear serious playground accidents as I broke my leg on an elementary school playground. And bullies abounded there. Bullying, an unfortunate rite of passage through childhood, was something that we were aware of. But the concept of bullying wasn't the watchword that it is today in schools. People weren't trained about avoiding bullies. We weren't trained how to not contribute to bullying. When bullies threatened someone, it was the rare person who stood up against it. Most people looked on in stony silence. Nowadays, children are actively taught about bullying, and they are also taught that innocent bystanders are not so innocent. That they are complicit in the bullying because when they don't speak up, they help to create or perpetuate a culture of bullying. So, when flagrant racism is flaunted in a cafe and is met with stony silence, might we call those people's inaction bystander racism? Think about it. When we stand silently by and allow hate speech to be uttered, don't we perpetuate a culture of racism? Don't we quietly support it? The cafe goer's silence might have at heart been shocked silence, not complicit racism, but still, that silence of the bystanders was a deafening silence to the women who were assaulted with a man's hateful words. The women were lone swimmers against a tide. People know how to speak up. I mean, we all do it all over the internet, every day. Social media is full of shared stories and strong language. But it's easy to sit behind a screen, removed from the fray, and state our minds. Kind of just like I'm doing now. It is much, much harder to stand up and speak out in real time in the real live world. And if whole groups of people sit down on this most essential job, what will prevent our country from swirling down an eddy of racist ideology? Speaking out is very hard in angry, tender situations, but this is exactly what we expect children to do on playgrounds and in cafeterias. They are encouraged to connect with friends for support and then stand up for what is right. How can we expect that of children and not do the same thing ourselves? Perhaps we need to go back to the playground for some valuable lessons. Two Muslim women left that cafe in tears, devastated by what a man said and by what people didn't say. We have a choice. We can stay seated at the cafe table, or we can stand up together and speak out against hate directed at innocent people. Otherwise, we are guilty of bystander racism.
Dr. Jerry Burns is a storyteller, writer, and educator living in New York's Hudson Valley. You can find her at storycrafters.com. She also is an adjunct professor in the Department of Communication at the State University of New York at New Paltz.
When we all see justice, then we'll all see peace.
Same as it ever was, but there's gotta be a better way. Same as it ever was, but today's a different day. You and me could make that change, but it's the same as it ever was. We better start today.
And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at WAMC.org and follow us on Twitter at 51% Radio. This week's show is number 1382.